Okay, and then you mentioned Omaha a minute ago, and as we're again stepping through the history here, it looks like you you did go to Omaha in the early 70s,
yeah.
And you worked on the P6 that's in our museum right here in Oshkosh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's terrific. That's great. That is an absolutely beautiful airplane, and anybody that's in the area for AirVenture or any time of the year, you know, take a look at that. It's been proudly displayed in our museum for many, many years. Cool. So Omaha, then next is Tennessee, and working on a P-12 or Model 100.
Tennessee, yeah.
Was this another sort of contract job that somebody came and told you they wanted to build this?
Explain this.
Well, you know, one of the last things he did in Florida was that a gentleman was an airline pilot, and he picked up the airframe or the steel frame for a Model 100.
Okay.
And he thought the first thing needed to be known was the tail surfaces, and he went around and got bids from various people, and they were always, and we're talking 1960 bids.
Yeah.
They were six digits.
Really?
And so
that is significant.
Somebody told him to go see Herb, so he went to Herb, and he basically said, yeah, I could probably do it for about $10,000. Even then, he thought he was stealing money from the guy.
Wow.
And Ted Voorhees was the pilot's name. Voorhees just said, here's a check, do it.
Oh, that's
and
amazing.
And so rather than trying to press everything out at one piece, he made two different dives. One would be just about a 6-inch piece of the hump. Then he had a little 2-inch piece that was the end cap. So he was in his shop for about a week or so just pressing the corrugation.
That is absolutely just mind-blowing.
Once that was done, you know, he made the ribs and riveted it all together.
So jumping ahead a little bit, again, and I'm paging through the most lovely sort of spiral-bound resume. I wish that everybody out there could see this. We're jumping up to 1985 now. You're in Fort Worth, Texas, and you did some restoration work on a Messerschmitt 109.
Yeah.
How did that feel to you, having started your career in the Luftwaffe? Yeah. Now you've been in the U.S. for 40 years at this point, maybe 35 years at this point. Mm-hmm. How does that feel going back and working on a German fighter?
German fighters came to me and asked for the good stuff too. You know,
so
what mattered?
So it's only fair to give
anyway
a little bit back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's wonderful. So it looks like you spent some time with Champlin in Texas. You did the spinner for the 109, a cowling for
with Champlin.
Spad.
I was many times.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Then there's an SX-300 in there. Was that yours that you built, or was that one the Swearingen SX?
Well, no, this what do you call this thing?
Yeah, it actually was several kit planes. You know, some doctors and lawyers had bought them. Then realized they don't have the mechanical aptitude, and they came to him, and so he did it as a group as such.
Oh, excellent!
So
that's great.
You'll notice there's like several horizontals and several sets of verticals, and
we recently ran a story in Sport Aviation about sort of the gaggle of SX-300s that are still down in Florida, the air park down there.
Mm.
So,
I guess this I built several of them.
Yeah,
yes, that's the SX-300. What a beautiful fast airplane!
Oh, this was a toy for me. Yeah. This thing, because they said, yeah, they want this. Okay, yeah. I make it as they fly it, or so I don't care.
Mm-hmm. So, something interesting in here that we may have missed. You worked with General Dynamics.
No. Unfortunately, it's
I'm
it's,
sorry. I'm
it's
into
me.
Your pages now, George. Excuse me. Forgive me for stumbling over that. So Herb, after your time in Clearwater, where are you living now?
Fort Worth.
You're in Fort Worth. Okay.
So,
I see where we're ending up here. We're getting into the story of the Texas Airplane Factory. So you were there at the beginning for the Texas Airplane Factory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And started out with these were the Grumman F3Fs.
Grumman F3Fs. The tie-in to this is with Doug, going back to Doug Champlin and such. You know, Doug actually, you know, he lost his two-seat here back in the early 70s.
Yeah.
That, you know, and because somebody didn't screw down the gas cap properly. But,
oh, sure.
And so Doug went back in the 70s, went around looking for people to try to rebuild it, and then the restoration shops wanted to touch it at the time.
Right.
Stumbled upon Herb, and Herb said, I could do it, but it'd be more cost-effective to do a batch of them. And so, I admired Doug for this. For 10 years, he went around harassing his friends who were other Warbird owners and such, well, not, you know, until he got three other guys to join. And so Herb then built four F3Fs.
And these were brand new build airplanes, but basically two original specs and everything else.
Right.
Yeah.
That was just amazing. So that was the first big thing that Texas Airplane Factory did. And then after that, was it the 190s?
No.
Did you guys work on the 190s? Okay. So then we started the 262 project.
Yeah.
So can you tell me a little about what that was like working on the 262s?
Several times a German pilot came into my shop, you know.
Right.
And he explained to me that he wants this, so I built it out for them too, you know.
Oh, well, wow.
It was on the American side or on the German side, either way.
Yeah. Was a businessman in the East Coast who was able to get access to the Navy one, and we used that as the pattern airplane. The intent was to build about five or so and such, and there was some issues that didn't allow us to complete our obligations because of financing issues on his part.
Oh, sure.
And so, but we did get, we did get the five up to a certain point, and we're quite proud of what we did and as such. And
then these are the airplanes that moved up to Everett, Washington.
Right.
And then, and then eventually flew there.
They got finished out of there.
Right.
And, but the real interesting, once the World War II German Pilots Association found out that another German was building the 262, even though he wasn't even an officer.
Right.
All of a sudden, he became like, one of their best friends.
Oh, sure.
As such, and he got to meet many outstanding pilots, guys like Rawl, Shook, Gallon.
Good friends.
And as such, and I think he really enjoyed their friendship, and I think they enjoyed his because. They had the common background of being in the war,
right?
As such, from different perspectives.
So I've seen two or three of these 262s up close, mm-hmm. and I was lucky to be there for the first flight in Everett, Washington, when Wolfgang
Chaya,
yes, where you made that first flight, and that was a spectacular thing. So I can tell you, everything I saw, the workmanship on these airplanes was remarkable. So very, very well done. I just wonder, can you remember what did it feel like working on Messerschmitt jets in the 1990s?
This was obligation to me, when a pilot shows up and say, "Hey, I want this," this was not enough.
Well, there were two challenges involved with the 262s, and one of them was trying to make everything as authentic as possible,
right?
But still safe enough because there were some safety issues on the originals.
Oh, sure. The UMO engines were not necessarily the most reliable things and not good for very long
time. And the other part, of course, was unfortunately having to deal with the business side of things and trying to make that work out right, but was not able to accomplish that part.
It's not often that business and airplanes ever really go hand in hand all that well. Now, this is interesting here. Again, looking through this history, there's a Nakajima Hayabusa. Oscar.
Yeah, we got some connection that from Japanese pieces they left over. We find it.
Doug.
He was the guy who wants to say take this stuff. So okay. Ivan Dora, he took it out of the mud and brought us to meet for the house. I built one by one of these.
We rebuilt the four that he recovered off of the Kuril Islands, the northernmost Kuril Island. Was where the 54 Sente was,
right.
And these airplanes, flew with them, and they were abandoned after the war. And even though it was Russian, it became Soviet territory until, and it still is. But Doug was able to get these out back in the 90s.
Wow. That is just remarkable. Well, Herb, you've had an amazing career in aviation. I understand that you're here at AirVenture. Well, certainly sorry to hear you have to go, but I appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk. Now, George, you're here. Are you here all week?
I'm here all week. Okay. I've been a Warbird judge for quite a while and as such, and I got things to do the next few days.
Well, I guess that we all do. Well, Herb, sir, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for taking the time to come in and talk to us, for sharing this remarkable resume of yours. I wish we would have had another several hours to talk. Unfortunately, we have a limited amount of time. So once again, thank you both very, very much for your time.